Hello and welcome to the Common Sense Gospel. I'm Danny Simmons.
And I'm Kurt Norbert.
And we are very excited about our topic today. We're going to look at the blind man in John chapter 9. The title of this podcast is A Blind Man Sees His Savior. And I'm not kidding. We love this guy. We love the lessons that are learned here, both certainly for him, but for the disciples of Jesus and for the Pharisees who will quickly become involved and insert themselves into this situation. There's just so much here that we can learn, and I think every single word is important, and that's the way God's word works anyway, but some of this really shines as we go through John 9, and so we're excited to go through that with you today, and we appreciate you being with us. Is there anything, just starting off, initial idea, thought, something you want to share before we go?
This man, the blind man, is my favorite character in the Bible, simply because he has an experience with the truth. He is in touch with reality, and he just stands on that without fear. He has absolute confidence in what's happened to him. He's not intimidated by power, but in the phrase that's popular these days, he's willing to speak truth to power. I think in him we see a great contrast between boldness and fear, what fear will do to you. Along with other strong emotions.
You're right. It is all right here in this man's life. And this all happens in one day as far as we can tell. So let's step into the reading and let's be thinking about this man who is about to meet Jesus. John chapter 9 and verse 1. Now as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When he had said these things, he spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. And he said to him, Go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. We're told Jesus, as he is passing by, sees a man who was blind from birth. This man has never seen.
What amazes me about all of this, yes, this man has never seen anything in his life, so he knows nothing else. He goes by smell, touch, and hearing primarily. But this is kind of a unique instance of healing in the sense that Jesus doesn't ask him, do you want to be healed? This man doesn't call out and say, give me my sight back. In fact, he doesn't really have anything to go on except what he's just heard Jesus say to the disciples in answer to their question, which gives him an opportunity to start teaching about light and darkness, sight and blindness, which is the theme of this entire chapter, is seeing and not seeing, both physically and ultimately spiritually. And yet, with so little to go on, Jesus just reaches down and daubs his eyes with mud and says, go wash in the pool of Siloam, and he goes.
It's amazing. I can't believe that he just goes.
Yeah, no question. You know, well, what do you want me to do when I get there? No, just go wash in the pool of Siloam. And he doesn't argue. No questions, just go. Yeah. And I think we see there the relationship between grace, faith, and works. We're saved or we're blessed by grace through a faith that works. Because Jesus didn't have to do anything for this man, except he pointed out it's for the glory of God that he's blind. We're going to see the glory of God in this. But by grace, he has extended healing because the man didn't do anything to deserve it. But he has to accept that grace by a faith that works.
Yeah.
So we're not saved by grace alone or faith alone or works, obviously. They're all three interwoven. They work together.
By God's design.
Yep. God offers by grace. We accept by faith that obeys what he wants us to do, just like this man.
Very well said. And I don't want us to just fly by. I think, you know, all of us in our mind's eye just imagine a man who was born blind. He has a routine. He has a daily life that he has grown used to. And as Kurt said, he cannot see. He's never seen with his eyes. He has learned to sharpen the other senses that are available to him. He can hear. He can smell. And his sense of touch is going to be very helpful to him as he makes his way through town, out of his home, even getting up out of bed. This man has never seen a human face. He's never seen a flower. He's never seen the face of his father or his mother. He's never looked and seen his own reflection. He can feel the rain when it falls, but he doesn't know what it looks like other than the drops that will touch his body. He can feel the warmth of the sunshine. He knows when the sun has come up without his eyes because the sun provides warmth. You know, but I want us to stop for a minute and understand that in a lot of ways, because he's never, ever seen, he ultimately doesn't know what he's missing other than other people in his life saying, check that out or look at this. I would assume that he just kind of, you know, in his head's like, people are just going to, they don't know and they shouldn't have to be sympathetic to me all the time. People are just going to say those things. But again, just thinking about his family life, we know he has a family because his mother and father are going to be introduced. He probably has friends and he has a life that he lives without this sight. And just imagine now you're sitting on the ground at like you do every day, possibly begging for alms. Jesus stops and he's looking at him and the disciples say, hey, you know, can you answer this for us? Who sinned, this man or his parents? And Jesus' answer, it just, if you think about the blind man, he says, neither this man nor his parents sinned. Well, they've called him rabbi. So a rabbi, a teacher of God's law, looking at this man says, he did not sin. That is a huge relief. And his parents didn't sin either. That's not why this has happened to him. Now, I am all ears. But the next thing he says is, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. And that would be frustrating and hard to hear. In what way have the works of God been demonstrated in me? And of course, Jesus is speaking about what's about to take place. Mm-hmm. But again, even after he's healed, imagine the next bit of your life, you're thinking, I went through all that time blind. It says he's a man. I was blind all that time so that God could be glorified on one particular day. That is just a lot to think about and to finally get settled on.
I think it's fascinating. You know, there is so much to get from this chapter, but to see this man's journey to Jesus is fascinating. Here's a heart that is open. In one way, you could say that having never seen, he's got an advantage. Because his knowledge and his perception is not clouded by what you see.
Right.
Our eyes can deceive us. We are primarily visual creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And as we're going to find out in this chapter, you can see and not see. Because that's the point that both Jesus and the blind man illustrate. Your eyes may be working perfectly, and yet you can't see a thing.
Yeah.
Because having been sighted all your life, you've allowed what you see to influence the way you think.
Yeah.
This man can't do that. He's never, you know, when someone says, wow, the sky sure is blue today, what does that mean? He that means nothing to him. What's blue? How do you describe that to a blind person? So he's never had this, and yet now his whole life is dramatically changed.
Yeah.
And he holds on to that simple truth all the way through this, and it allows him to progress in the way he sees Jesus now.
Yeah, that's right. And so and I think this is also by the design of Christ. Oh, I know it is. You know, I'm just trying to figure out exactly why, but spit into the dirt, make the clay, rub it on the man's eyes, that when these guys start asking how, this is not the formula for healing blindness. You know, it's just a series of steps that he went through, and it really just confuses everybody. Jesus didn't he doesn't need mud to heal the man's sight. There's a process that's very intentional. He's going through it. And as we talked about, he says, now go wash in the pool of Siloam. He went and washed, and he came back seeing. That's how our reading finished. He went and did what he was told. He came back seeing. And Jesus did not say to him, as you pointed out, if you go wash in the pool of Siloam, your sight will be restored. And because he would have probably hurried along to see if that was going to be true or not. Jesus gave him no guarantees. He just told him to go and wash. So he does. So now he's seeing. Now in verse 8, it says, therefore the neighbors and those who previously had seen that he was blind said, is this not he who was sat and begged? Some said, this is he. Others said, he is like him. He said, I am he.
I'm the one. <Yeah. laughs>
Therefore they said to him, how were your eyes opened? He answered and said, a man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and I received my sight. Then they said to him, where is he? He said, I do not know. The people cannot figure out if this is the same guy or not.
Yeah, well, it's amazing. Jesus even commented on this in certain instances, that Israel has fallen so far away from their God that they can't even deal with a miracle taking place in their midst. Yet they should know God. You read back through the Old Testament, it's got miracles all over the place in God's dealings with man. And yet they're confused. And it's because they're in darkness. They can't see. And so, I mean, it's almost kind of a natural reaction. You wouldn't expect a guy that you know has been blind every time you've seen him all his life. Now he sees. Is this the same guy? Well, it looks like him, but he's not blind. What's going on here? So their questions are natural. How did he do it?
Yeah.
You know, a guy, I went and I see now. And he go, well, what did he do? How did he do this? What happened? That's natural to know. But in their confusion and not knowing how to process this, they take him to the authorities. So our next scene is, and really the whole center of the story here, the man is before the Pharisees now, and we can see how truth reacts or sight reacts with blindness.
Yeah.
Especially when it's willful.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a couple things I want to point out, because what we just read, this is the first time now the people see him, and they're like, he's wearing the same clothes. He looks like the guy. And they're wrestling with that, as you pointed out, but they ask, how did he heal your blindness? And so that question is going to be asked specifically and most often by the Pharisees. How? They're upset that it's the Sabbath day and we want to know how. They never ask who, you know, with as you said, with the understanding that God has done something here, and we want to know who, because we want to see him. He could be the one we're all waiting for. That should have been the way they responded to this. And it is how, because we're going to attack. We've already determined to attack. And we're going to see that in this text. It does not matter. No matter what evidence comes, we are going to attack this man, Jesus, which is insulting, obviously to God, but even to their own understanding and their ability to think and reason. They've thrown it all in the trash because they hate Jesus, and it has kept them from seeing the obvious truth. So we want to look at when we see the word how, because they ask it over and over again. And the other thing I see is that the man, he gives a long answer here in verse 11 to what took place. When they ask how, he said, a man called Jesus made clay, anointed my eyes, and said to me, go wash in the pool of Siloam and wash. Go to the pool of Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and I received sight. That's exactly what took place. And that's the longest answer he's going to give. Each time he's asked again, the answer gets shorter and shorter.
Because, there's not a lot that went on here. You know, he doesn't have to give a lengthy description.
No.
His lengthy description is verse 11.
Yeah, and he says, this is all I know that happened. And by the way, 90% of that time, I was blind.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry I can't help you. Where is he? I don't know. So verse 13, they brought him who formerly was blind to the Pharisees. Just as you said, you know, somebody's told on him. It bothers me. Somebody's like, we got to take you into the authorities. Now, as it was a Sabbath when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes, there's the problem for them. Then the Pharisees also asked him again how he had received his sight. There it is again. He said to them, He put clay on my eyes, and I washed, and I see. Therefore some of the Pharisees said, This man is not from God, because he does not keep the Sabbath. They're talking about Jesus there. Others said, How can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was a division among them. They said to the blind man again, What do you say about him, because he opened your eyes? He said, He's a prophet.
Yeah, so here's the next step in his journey to Jesus, as I like to call it. Now he's gone from a man named Jesus to, well, he's a prophet. And he's just going on the evidence.
Right.
And it's not that difficult.
Nope.
I was blind, I washed, and I see. What is there to wrestle with about that? Of course, as you pointed out, Jesus did it on the Sabbath, and immediately that ticks off the Pharisees. Although you can see their dishonesty and their blindness here, because Jesus has dealt with this issue. He's been fighting with them over the Sabbath almost from the start, and he's pointed out their hypocrisy. You keep the Sabbath, and yet you allow work to be done. You'll pull your sheep out of a hole. The priests, you don't complain about them, but they're sacrificing and working on the Sabbath. But they just don't want to hear it.
No.
We've got our rules on the Sabbath. He broke those rules. Therefore, he's a sinner. Well, only in their sight. And it creates even a division among the Pharisees, because some of them ask a very simple and obvious question. How can a man who is a sinner do such signs? Well, unfortunately, those who are wanting to destroy Jesus cannot voice the simple and obvious answer to that. It's a very simple question.
That's right.
You've got to deal with that, and they just refuse to.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how they try to maneuver around it here in just a minute. But there it is again. How did you receive your sight? And again, answer is much shorter. He put clay on my eyes, I washed, and I see. Then they ask him. So, they're trying to get something out of them. They're digging for information. So they say, okay, what do you say about him? And because there's nowhere else to turn. He's the only guy that was involved in this miracle. What do you think? And again, you can think whatever you want, but maybe something this man says here will give us something to stand on. What do you say about him? Then he drops a bomb on him and he says he is a prophet. Now, Moses said that a prophet like me will come up from amongst your brethren. And when he comes, him you shall hear, in Deuteronomy 18. And so they're in trouble if they accept what's taking place. And we're going to watch them try their best to dodge that. And one other thing, that I will probably say it again, but he has heard about Pharisees. He's probably even heard them speak publicly. He's heard other people talk about the Pharisees. They're in a position of authority. That's clear, whether you have your sight or not. But as you were pointing out, without the vision, without all the pomp and all the robes and the headdresses and the way people, just kind of shrunk down when the Pharisees walked by, he's never seen any of that. So he stands before this group, and for the first time in his life, he sees how they're dressed. He may be thinking, I'm dressed better than y'all are. You look like idiots. I don't know what he thinks.
Yeah, we don't know.
But isn't it?
So it doesn't impress him, though, whatever he sees.
It doesn't strike fear in his heart at all.
He's not intimidated by them at all.
Which is what you pointed out, that having no sight saved him from falling into that trap of, oh, here they come. We got to be afraid of these guys because they have authority and they can kick people out of the synagogue and they can do all kinds of things. This guy's begging on the side of the road. They've never even talked to him or thought about him or considered him in any way. And so he has no reason. He owes them nothing.
Yeah.
And this puts him in a perfect position to rip them apart. For the first time, as far as we know, he's been brought in front of the Pharisees to be questioned. Why? Because Jesus is involved?
Yep. That's the only reason. Man. And so when they're in their effort to try to find something out and figure out what to do about all of this, they decide, well, we need to confirm whether this guy really was blind.
Exactly.
What is going on? Maybe this is all just a farce. Maybe we can find our out.
That's right.
Right here.
And then they're looking. Yes. So verse 18 says, But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him who had received his sight. That tells us right there. They didn't believe he was ever blind at all.
Yeah. Well, couldn't be. Because we're not going to attribute a miracle to this Jesus. He breaks the Sabbath. So,
but what they're saying
is another explanation.
You've pretended to be blind your whole life and decided that this day you would pull the wool over our eyes. We're not buying it. We don't think you were ever blind, even though witnesses say this is him.
Yeah. What about the people who brought him before the Pharisees? They knew who he was. So, yeah, they're
insane.
Desperate. They're desperate.
They're insane. So they asked them, they brought the parents in. And again, remember, this man is standing here. He knows his mother's voice better than anyone in the world. And she comes in and he sees her for the first time.
Mm.
His father too, you know. The ones that he could hear, even from the womb, he could hear them speak and became familiar with them. And I'm sure, understanding that vision was real, people had it, that he would long to see his parents. Mm. And unfortunately, this is the first time they come together while he has his sight. I don't want to remove the possibility that when they stepped into the room, they embraced. And there was some tears shed.
Mm. Now that's the natural reaction.
Oh, absolutely. He says, "Mom, I can see. I can see what you're wearing." You know, I don't think they're just sitting there like, "Okay, what are your questions for us?" I think there's still the real human nature side of all of this. However, God doesn't see fit to share that with us. It doesn't matter. His mom knows by the way he's moving now that he's not feeling around. He can see. His eyes work. So they ask the parents, they put them on the spot. "Is this your son, whom you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" His parents answered and said, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind. But by what means he now sees, we do not know. Or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He is of age. Ask him. He will speak for himself." His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed already that if anyone confessed that he was Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, "He is of age, ask him." You know, if nothing else, this points to the tyranny.
Yes.
And the power and the authority that these men abused all the time.
Well, I think you see there the predominant emotions that are portrayed here are fear, anger, and hatred.
Oh, that's awful.
And I think you see the fear on the part of the Pharisees here. They're using their position to put pressure on the people to try to tamp out this Jesus stuff that's going all over the place. And we know that they were afraid of him because it's pointed out to us in other gospels. They were afraid of losing their power, of losing their position. They were afraid of the people. They wouldn't ask Jesus or answer Jesus' question about the baptism of John because they feared the people. So they're afraid of this whole situation. So they're acting out of three of the most dangerous emotions we have: fear, anger, and hatred. Because those can be destructive. When someone reacts based on those emotions, it's always bad. There's something bad's going to happen.
Yeah.
And as I've pointed out before, and I think it's important to see this, especially in our society today, strong emotion clouds your ability to reason. They have this man standing right in front of them. They can see the blind man, but they can't see him.
Yeah.
They are refusing to accept this man standing right in front of their face. And everyone agrees he was born blind. Now he sees. He tells them why. Nope, we don't want to hear that. No, no, no. And then when they have no more room to maneuver, they fall back the way people have always done so. When you don't have any more evidence to stand on, when you can't handle the message, you start to attack the messenger.
That's right. Scream as loud as you can and yell and accuse and do everything you can to get the pressure off of you, which, like you said, Jesus isn't even there. And these guys are crawling out of their skin because they can't find a way out of this. And as you said, the evidence, God's evidence that he supplied, is standing before them. And all the witnesses who came in to say, "Yeah, I think I'm sure this is him. It's the same. He's got the same clothes on. He looks the same. This is the guy." And he's proclaiming that to them. They say, "We're going to get your parents." And they go drag them in to this ridiculous meeting. "Are you his parents? Was he born blind? Because apparently you say that he is your son." And they say, "Yeah, he's our son. And yes, he was born blind." And imagine again, mom and dad saying he was born blind. Man, they lived through every minute of every day of what that meant.
Yep.
And these Pharisees are trying to use them to get the conclusion they want. You know they apply the pressure because it says his parents feared the Pharisees.
There's fear again.
Because they had already made a proclamation. If anyone confesses Jesus as the Christ, they will be thrown out of the synagogue, which means you will lose everything, your livelihood, your connection and your definition as being a Jew. All of it is stripped from you. You can't earn a living in a town full of Jews if you're thrown out of the synagogue.
And really, from their viewpoint also, if you were cast out from the people, cast out of the synagogue, you have no fellowship with God.
That's right. They go hand in hand.
So they're using that in such an evil way to force the people into line. You know, okay, if you see this obvious evidence in front of you, you have to deny it or we're going to put you out of the synagogue. Well, that doesn't frighten the man who was formerly blind. I'm sure he had heard this edict too. He knew that if you don't stand with us, you don't toe the line, you're out of here.
That's right.
Well, he all he's got is the evidence. I know what happened to me.
Yep.
And that's where I'm taking my stand.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what they say or what they do. This happened to me. This man gave me my sight. How can I not uphold that and react accordingly?
I hate that his parents...
Yeah, they're just dragged into this.
They seem to just cave immediately. I hate that, but they weren't there. There's a lot they didn't get to see. And so they point out what is obvious. He's of age. We gave you the answer you asked us about if he's our son or not. But he's of age. He was there. Ask him. And it tells us because they were afraid. So in verse 24, they called the man again who was blind. And they said to him, "Give God the glory. We know that this man is a sinner." He answered and said, "Whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see." Then they said to him again, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" He answered them, "I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples?" Then they reviled him and said, you are his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples. So they pin him down again. Tell us, we are demanding that you tell us how. There's that question, not who. We're not looking for a son of God. We want to know how so we can rip this man apart. And you can tell and see the frustration in him at this point.
Yeah.
I thought I ran this by you already.
You're not listening. You're not seeing, really, spiritually speaking.
And everyone who's come in here has told you the same thing. I was blind, now I see, including my parents.
Yeah. It's not a convoluted explanation. There's nothing that you have to unravel here. It's very simple. It gets me that, you know, give God the glory. We know this man's a sinner. How do you know that?
Yeah, well, now you give evidence for that.
Well, he broke your rules concerning the Sabbath. That's all they're going on. But the blind man, the formerly blind man, doesn't follow that rabbit.
Nope.
He comes right back to the evidence. I don't know if he's a sinner or not. That's not the point here. The point is, I was blind, and now I see.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what we're dealing with. So he brings them right back to the subject under discussion here, and they don't have anywhere to go. So, well, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? I already told you that.
No, tell us
and
how.
You just don't want to listen.
Yeah, tell us how.
And he puts it right back on them. He actually kind of, I think he's almost being satirical here. In verse 27, it would have been so great to listen to the intonation of this of this dialogue.
Yeah.
But we're not there. All we can do is read the words. But I think he's smacking it back at him. It's not necessarily that he's being disrespectful to authority, but he's frustrated because they just won't accept the truth. What do you want me to say? There's nothing more that's involved here. I was blind. I washed. I see. What do you want to know about that? What is so difficult about that?
I can't tell you any more than that.
Yeah, that's all there is to it. And so he goes, "Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples?" I think it's interesting. He says, "Do you also want to become his disciples?"
Right.
Like he's kind of thinking of himself as, well, he's the one who gave me my sight. you're just up here acting like fools.
Yep.
So it seems to me he's the one I need to follow.
I can't follow you guys.
I need to be a disciple of him, not you and the show you're putting on here. Exactly. You're an embarrassment.
Exactly. And we don't want to miss, in verse 28, it says they reviled him.
Oh, yeah.
And revile is, it is accusatory. It is extremely aggressive. The word itself, it lends itself to physical abuse. When you just look up the word and the other words are connected to it, railing. They were tearing into him with everything they had and accusing him of everything under the sun, and they've lost control. And when you see somebody who is supposed to be in a position of power, who has control over everybody, can't control themselves, something is not right. And so it's just interesting. They're showing all of their cards by attacking a guy who was laying on the side of the street when the day started, begging for alms. Now they got him in front of him, and they're trying to rip him apart with all of their wisdom and all their, you know, it is very frustrating to watch it unfold the way that it is. But they say something interesting. At 29, they say, "We know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we do not know where he is from." And the man answered and said to them, "Why? This is a marvelous thing that you do not know where he's from. Yet he has opened my eyes. Now we know that God does not hear sinners. But if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. Since the world began, it's been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of one who was born blind. If this man, Jesus, were not from God, he could do nothing." They answered and said to him, "You were completely born in your sins, and you are teaching us." And they cast him out. 29, that's very interesting. "We know that God spoke to Moses. But for this guy, we don't know where he's from." So when did God speak to Moses?
Well, for the first time was at the burning bush.
The burning bush. And what does God say his name is?
I am.
And who does Jesus say he is in John 8?
We say a chapter before, but at a previous time, he told them when they couldn't, "You're not yet 50 years old, and have you seen Abraham? Well, before Abraham was, I am.
I am."
And they picked up stones to throw at
him. They tried to kill him because they knew what he was saying.
They knew exactly what he was saying.
And now
just won't listen.
They're using this moment in time to go, "We know Moses talked to God." It's like, okay.
Yeah.
So how can you not
follow
know where
that
he's...
out? In fact, Jesus has dealt with that hypocritical attitude too. You say you follow Moses. He says you, by your tradition, nullify the commandment of Moses.
That's right.
In your treatment of parents. He says, if you believed Moses, you would believe me because he wrote of me. So they claim to be Moses' disciples. They're not even listening to Moses. Stephen points that out in Acts chapter 7. Moses was appointed by God, and he was rejected by the people, and you're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So they know better. Jesus has rebuked them about this, has shown them their hypocrisy, but they refuse to see. And so they're not discussing the point anymore. You notice we don't have anywhere to go on this. What's left to do? Attack the messenger.
That's right.
We'll go after, and we'll fall back. We follow Moses.
That's right.
We're the righteous ones here. So get that straight. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so since they've reached that point, they won't make the conclusion from the obvious evidence. He makes it for them. And this is a marvelous thing that you do not know where he's from, and yet he opened my eyes. Here should be your cause and effect. Here's a simple way to look at this. It's not difficult.
It's marvelous.
It's just that you won't see it.
You
don't want to accept it. He opened my eyes, and you're having trouble figuring things out about him. And that should tell you everything. In fact, one thing I like to point out a lot is they knew their Old Testament. And if they'd ever thought about this, especially in this context where they're dealing with blindness that's been healed, it's my belief that blindness was a specifically messianic miracle that was foretold in the Old Testament.
That is absolutely right. Yeah.
Nobody else ever healed blindness
in the Old Testament. Yeah.
It's like he says, it's been unheard of since the foundation of the world that anyone open the eyes of the blind. So here comes someone along who the prophet said, okay, the Messiah is going to open the eyes of the blind. He's going to give sight to the blind among the many other things he's going to do. Man, that should have just smacked him right in the forehead. It should have smashed the frontlet that they like to tie around their forehead.
I think it did. Hey, they responded this is
the one the prophets were talking about. He's healing the blind. He must be the Messiah because that's what we're told the Messiah would do. It doesn't even click.
No.
Because of their fear and their hatred and their anger, they cannot rationally view anything now. So they're reduced to attacking this man, and he points out the ridiculousness of that.
Yeah.
He doesn't start snarling back at him. He just says, look at you guys. You're telling me you can't figure it out. So I'm going to tell you, I'm going to lay it out for you here in verses 31 through 33 and make the conclusion for you.
Yeah.
So then what's their response? We're self-righteous. You were born a sinner and you're trying to teach us.
And they cast him out because he's no good to them.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
And Jesus had said, well, he wasn't born a sinner.
Yeah.
That his blindness hasn't anything to do with him born in sin or anything like that. There goes original sin out the window, by the way.
Yeah. But still holding on to it.
They're still saying, nah, you sinned. You were born a sinner. We're righteous before God. So don't be teaching us, especially because you're telling the truth and we don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, that's terrible.
So they cast him out. Terrible situation.
One thing that we need to remember, because there can be personal application that I really try to make as often as I can, and that is, you know, knowing your Bible and knowing passages, and you can slip into the Pharisaical position.
That's right. Yep.
Because it's easy to look down on someone who doesn't know the Bible as well as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And so once you realize you have the authority as far as understanding of Scripture, you can begin to unfairly hold verses over someone that even you yourself, you're not following it either.
Yeah.
But you're the wise one. You're the one who has God's word. It gets so ugly in the church when it begins to develop, and it's especially if the members fear someone who is really, really, you know, scripturally sound and strong, but they're also a bully. That most people, especially Christians, that we're sheep. We're supposed to be humble and to submit to one another. And so you get somebody in who's ramrodding all the instructions and rules for a congregation, there's going to be great destruction take place from that, because once a man takes hold of that and sees it, he'll become ever stronger, at least in his own little world.
Mm-hmm.
But how awful is that, that using, you know, saying, I'm a disciple, I know the word of God, therefore everything else I say is utter foolishness and you have to accept it.
Right. You start using the sword to whack people upside the head with it.
The Bible was not given to me so that I could accuse you.
That's right.
The Bible's given to me so that I can search my own heart and get my life straight. And the same for you. We can help others and look for opportunities to do that if we've come to an understanding of some particular topic or subject, or, you know, some, not everybody's on the same page. We're different levels of maturity. But the second you think that you're God's right-hand man, you better start over. And that was true for them, and I think it's true for us. We've got to be careful.
We're people too, and we can fall into the same trap they did, that we've got it figured out. We know what it takes to be righteous. We've done that, so we are righteous, and so we set the bar.
Yeah.
And you better be like us or else.
Yeah.
And that's the Bible constantly is telling us. We may know the truth and someone else is struggling with it, but we approach them with gentleness and humility and love.
Love, yeah.
Concerning that, whatever situation it is. We don't go in there and start browbeating them.
That's right.
Because we see what happens here when you do that.
It's awful. So, you know, it'd be a shame to just stop reading, because this man has been kicked out of what now ultimately is a man-made institution. They, as you said, they left Moses, they left God. It's all about them. So he's been thrown out. Everyone's afraid to be thrown out. He's thrown out of this man-made institution where everyone gets to wear funny robes and funny hats. And he's all alone for a little bit, but then he gets that grand invitation for an eternal home in heaven. And it is always the better choice to leave institutions of men or be kicked out if need be, so that we can step into the realm of what heaven is and what God has promised to us. Verse 35, Jesus heard that they cast him out. Oh, man, how much did he hear? Every word.
Yeah.
He's God.
He knew exactly what's going on. Yep.
At first, I was like, I wonder who told him. I was like, well, he knows. He knows. So Jesus heard that they had cast him out. And when he had found him, he said to him, do you believe in the Son of God? He answered and said, who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him? Remember how I was saying, they've been asking how?
Mm-hmm.
This guy,
who. Yeah.
This guy took that W on the end and moved it to the front of the word.
Yeah, there you go.
And now,
yes,
the right question. Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him? Jesus said to him, you have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you. Then he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him.
Yep, there's the journey completed.
What a beautiful trade-off.
He asks the most important question, who is the Son of God?
Just show me.
So that I can believe him.
Just show me.
I want to believe him. Just tell me who he is.
I haven't seen him yet.
Well and so Jesus says, you have not only seen him.
All right. You're welcome.
He is the one who is talking to you.
Yeah.
So it's just awesome. What we see here, yes, he's alone. He's been cast out from men. But the Lord stands by him. He's not alone for long.
That's right.
Jesus seeks him out. When he hears about him being cast out, it says when he had found him. So he went looking for him.
Yeah.
Of course, he kind of probably knew where to look. He's going to be around the area that he's familiar with. But Jesus looked for him for the specific point of standing by his side and showing him the way to go. Telling him, basically, you're not alone. The Lord's with you now.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And it's the same for us today.
Yes,
when
sir.
When we leave the world behind, when we leave everything that man has made behind, and the world turns its back on us, we're not alone. The Lord stands by us.
That's right. And we have to know that's true, because that'll give us the confidence we need not to be afraid of the circumstances or the physical, and to stand on what we know to be true. It's a beautiful, beautiful picture. He's done so much for us in his stance for the truth on this glorious day. You ready for some trivia?
I think so.
Okay. I know this is your favorite character. I don't want to, push you out of here.
I don't have any trivia questions concerning the blind man, so.
Oh, I'd be ready for that.
One would hope. We've only just kind of done a survey of him.
I know.
I would encourage everyone, just read this chapter and think about it, what's going on here.
Yeah.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
What is happening. It shows us so much. But I'll let you, let's see. I think last time you asked me first, so I'm going to slap you down right now.
Okay.
Oh, that didn't sound loving, did it?
No, it didn't.
I'll do it in a loving way.
It's pharisaical, actually.
Trivia, sweet trivia.
How did Jesus describe his yoke and his burden?
Oh, it took me a second there. My yoke is easy, my burden is light.
Yep, Matthew chapter 11, verse 30.
Yeah. Man, that's awesome. Yeah. Okay, first one for you, second one for everyone else. According to John, the apostle, if all of the things that Jesus did were written one by one, where would all those books need to be stored?
He says the world could not contain the books that would be written.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah.
There's a lot of books in this world.
Yeah, and this world's a pretty big place, but it's not big enough to hold everything that could be said about Jesus.
Which tells you
about Jesus.
I know. The world can't hold it because he's greater than all.
He's beyond it, yeah.
The heavens and the earth the heaven of heavens can't contain him. And we're supposed to write down and complete that work, who he is.
Yeah.
And imagine, John gave us 21 chapters.
Yeah. But he said in concluding that point, even though the world couldn't contain everything that's written about Jesus, yet these are written so that you may believe.
That's right.
That Jesus is the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name.
Yeah.
So it's, Wow. What has been revealed for us is what we need to know.
Yeah, that's right. And so you got the answer right. It's John 21 and verse 25, the last verse of the book.
All right. Here's my second question to you, our third for our listeners. Who was Abigail?
There's more than one. Okay. Let me just answer
there's only one important Abigail.
Oh, now you're making me nervous.
But I think she's the only Abigail in the scriptures.
I'm going to go with she is the beautiful wife of Nabal, and she ends up becoming the wife after Nabal dies. She becomes the wife of David.
Yep. Nabal acts like a fool. Even Abigail says so, and that's what his name means. Because David is asking, you know, he says, we've protected your shepherds and your flocks and everything all this time, and we just would like you to, out of whatever you have at hand, just support us. And Nabal just blows him off. Well, that enrages David, and he's gets his men together, and he's on his way to deal with Nabal, and Abigail intercepts him.
Yeah.
And just says, you know, my husband is a fool, but, you know, you're the one who has taken care of everything. And so she brings him supplies for his men. And when Nabal finds out she's done that, he has a heart attack or some other a stroke, or he's basically made apoplectic, goes into a coma and dies. And so then, yes, eventually Abigail becomes the wife of David. That's 1 Samuel chapter 25, where we read about the entire story of Abigail.
Okay. So we haven't missed one today, and everything now rides
on. Ooh, the pressure's on me now.
Yep.
Okay. That's where you like to have it.
Don't let the team down. According to Acts 19, what were some of the unusual miracles that God was performing by the hands of Paul?
That a handkerchief that he had handled could be given to someone who needed healing and it would be accomplished.
Yes, from his body. Handkerchiefs and aprons that were brought from his body to the sick were healing diseases and casting out evil spirits. Wow. Mm. That is amazing. That's Acts chapter 19, verses 11 through 12. So we did great on our Bible questions. We hope that all of you did as well. We want to think about the blind man just for one more moment. He is so unbelievably special in the Bible as it's recorded for us. The position he takes, the stance that he takes, and the timeline in which he takes it makes him unbelievably brave and extremely special to us and certainly to God. He stands before the Pharisees when the disciples were still very, very afraid. And he stands up for Jesus all by himself. And as we pointed out, he has one picture of truth that he cannot deny. He accepts it for what it is. It is truth. And from there, he's now free from all of the bondage that all of those religious elite were trying to place on his shoulders. If you watch the blind man from the beginning of John chapter 9, you'll see that he progresses in who he believes Jesus to be. The first time he's asked about Jesus, he says, his name is Jesus, and this is what he did. The second time when the Pharisees ask, what do you think? What do you think about this man? He changes his answer, and he went from Jesus to, he is a prophet. Then when they question him further, he says to them, I know that he must be a worshiper of God who is doing God's will, because without that, he could not do these things. And the final thing he says concerning Jesus is when he meets the Lord himself and he calls him Lord, he falls down at his feet and he worships. What a man, what an example of faith. We should do all that we can to be like him, to live like him, to talk like him. We don't have to be afraid of anybody. Jesus is Lord, and no one and nothing can change that. Stand on that truth. Live with confidence in your life. If you are a child of God, that you are going home. We are pilgrims passing through, but we long to be with our Savior.